any rebuttal time if that applies to you. We'll start with United States versus Vargas. Will we first have Mr. Chandler? Good morning. Come on, please come speak with us. Valerie, give him his time back.
Good morning, Your Honor. James Chandler on behalf of Javier Martin Villar, who is one of the co-appellants in this matter. The first issue I would like to raise would be issue one in my brief about the motion to suppress that was served on my client's home on or about June the 11th of 2015. And essentially the error that the trial court made in this matter was that there was not a nexus to the home. At that point, the probable cause that the Lee County Sheriff's Office had was that my client had done allegedly two controlled buys with the Lee County Sheriff's Office. The first buy, my client had stopped off at his home and then went to the buy. The second, he didn't stop at the home at all. Later on, there was a subsequent trash pull where there was some loose marijuana found in the trash can of the home. That was the only nexus that there could be reasonable suspicion or probable cause that there was any contraband found in the home. And I cited Illinois v. Gates, 462 U.S. 213.
There was a trash pull, too?
Yes, sir. There was a trash pull. I believe I made mention of that on page 17 of my brief.
Yeah, and then based on all of that, a state circuit judge issued a warrant, right?
It was actually a Lee County judge, okay. County court judge, Judge Adams.
He's a circuit judge who's a state official.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So particularly in that there was not a basis to issue the warrant because there was no nexus to there being heroin in the home. There was no evidence, there was no testimony that there was suspected heroin in the home. And that would give rise to the two other issues three other issues I want to speak about in my limited time. The second issue was that there was a firearm enhancement for sentencing under sentencing guideline 2D1.1B1. And essentially that firearm was found in the nightstand in my client's room during the search warrant. He never possessed it, he never had it on it, he never brandished it during the commission of this. So if the motion to suppress were to have been granted, the firearm would have never been found. So if issue one is, if the court agrees with me on issue one, it almost renders issue two moot. But nonetheless, if the court doesn't agree with me on issue one, issue two, the trial court, enhanced my client's sentence to two levels for possession of a firearm during the commission based on simply having it in the home. And under that theory, you could enhance someone's sentence just by simply owning it. My client did possess.
How was it clearly improbable that the weapon was connected to the offense?
It was never used during the offense. It was just simply in the home, physically in the home, in the nightstand. It was never at a buy. It was never at the alleged trap house. It was just physically in a nightstand drawer. In the
drugs were there drugs found in the same room?
There were. My third issue was the managerial role that my client was enhanced with, and there's a number of factors that go into managerial role, and I don't have time to go through all of them. They're laid out in my brief. But if you go down through the factors, only I believe one factor actually applies to him. The rest of the factors do not apply, and he didn't perform any managerial role in this matter. And my final issue, and I'm running out of time here, is my fifth issue, which is my client did not receive any downward departure under 3553. My client had no prior criminal history.
Is that a departure or a variance?
A variance. I apologize. It should have been a variance. And that is a typo in my brief because I called it a departure.
So, and whatever you've raised in your brief is obviously still before us. You don't waive it by not addressing it. So,
yes,
I think we understand your case, Mr. Chandler. Thank you. You've saved a minute for rebuttal, Mr. Chaffee.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court? Mm-hmm.
My name is David Joffe, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Zacharias and Bob Aguado. Mr. Aguado was the 30-year-old, essentially homeless drug addict that squatted in the residence in Lee County for approximately 2 to 4 weeks. Mr. Aguado was indicted by a jury in Lee County, Florida, in 2 counts, and what was essentially a large heroin conspiracy. It's our position, Your Honors, that Mr. Aguado, that the government failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Aguado knowingly, voluntarily joined the conspiracy. The government failed to show that Mr. Aguado had any intent to join a conspiracy. Mr. Aguado essentially was essentially the fox in the hen house. He had no place to live. He was a heroin user and or abuser. There was a bottle of methadone, a prescription methadone bottle that was found in the residence. There was mail found in the residence that was addressed to Mr. Aguado, not to that residence. There was evidence that Mr. Aguado allegedly made a sale, but yet no one could really identify him other than a pair of shorts that were found in a pile of clothing that was a unique pair of shorts. There was a lot of cross-examination that I went through.
He sold heroin there, though, on multiple occasions, didn't he?
It's my understanding, Your Honor, that Mr. Aguado sold heroin on at least 2 occasions and that Mr. Aguado would allegedly stay there at nighttime. Now, Your Honor, Judge Pryor, my position is that because Mr. Aguado was there for approximately 2 to 4 weeks and may have, in fact, sold on possibly 2 occasions, does not...
And sold at other locations as well, right?
That's correct. Does not necessarily make him a member of this overall conspiracy.
But a jury could reasonably infer that he was.
That's correct. A very conservative jury in Lee County found that he was... guilty. Maybe a jury in Miami-Dade County would not have, but it is what we get. That's correct, Your Honor. We also raised other issues concerning minor role. Judge Chappell, it's interesting because at DE 46836 said, essentially, yes, minor role applies, but she didn't give minor role to Mr. Aguado. And the government in their brief said that maybe Judge Chappell misspoke. I remember being there at sentencing and hearing it, and yet it wasn't applied. So I personally think that minor role should apply to Mr. Aguado in this situation.
Saying that it was a ministerial error or that he did not receive it and he should have received it?
No, I don't think it's ministerial. Judge Chappell was clear in her later statements that she was not giving it to him.
Okay.
That's correct. But my argument today is that minor role should have been given to Mr. Aguado in this particular case. And I think clearly... articulated it pretty clearly that within the confines of his participation within that conspiracy, looking at that and looking at the average participant in that conspiracy.
Oh, but is his participation in the relevant conduct, in other words, not in the entire conspiracy, isn't that the test?
It is, Your Honor. But my position is that his participation in that still would qualify as a minor participant. I also would argue that in terms of the firearm, that essentially if someone goes to someone else's house and they're staying 3 days, because as Winston Churchill said, you know, guests and fish more than 3 days, whatever, get old and stale. But if you're staying in someone's house, how is someone to know that there's a firearm in the residence in a drawer? And how is someone to know that there may be heroin in the kitchen as well? That he should not have been given the two-level enhancement for the firearm because he had no knowledge that the firearm was there. He was in another room. It was not reasonably foreseeable. There was nothing to indicate that the firearm would have, could have, should have been used. This whole notion, and I guess in U.S. v. Ganey, which was a case 20-some-odd years ago about drugs and guns go together like peas and carrots, but...
It's a two-level enhancement... If it's taken off, would that affect the calculation of the guidelines?
It possibly could. It may open up another argument to downward variant.
But you don't know if it would really affect the guideline range.
As I sit here right now, I don't, Your Honor, as okay. I stand here.
Mr. Joffe, you've saved a minute for rebuttal. Mr. Upson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. I was going to hit it if
That's
I didn't
okay.
move it out of my way.
I understand.
I'd like to focus.
The government has confessed error on your client's sentencing issue.
They have, Judge. Keith Upson for appellant Daniel Vargas. And that's actually, there's only one facet of that issue I would like to focus on if it's necessary, and that's whether or not we waived it by insufficiently briefing it. We cited to this-
Government confessed error on that point. Unless you have some other issue that you've raised or briefed.
I don't, Judge. My concern was limited to whether or not there was still an outstanding issue that the briefing might have been insufficient such that Daniel Vargas wasn't entitled for vacation of the sentence and remand for resentencing consistent with Baptiste. This court's 2017 decision, which we did cite in that section on our brief.
As I understand it, you objected to the use of that Puerto Rico conviction and how it was the guideline range was calculated based on it, and the government's conceded that that was an error by the district court in the calculation of the range. The range actually should have been lower.
Then, Judge, I can give the court back 2.5 minutes.
All right, that's
And actually, that was the only reason I'd reserved a minute for rebuttal in case it was necessary.
Well, thank you very much. I always appreciate it when time is given back to us.
Thank you very much.
Especially on a Friday. Mr. Foxel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Wade Foxel for George Vargas, sentenced to 400 months. Our argument is basically he's already maxed out. We believe that 360 months should have been sufficient. All the factors which the trial court used to justify a 400-month sentence were already used to enhance him to that point. He was facing 360 months to life. The government argues that he received nothing from his prior incarceration. He's going to be released at 65 at the low end of the guidelines at 360 months. The government further argues that to protect the public, he should be incarcerated for the 400 months, whether he's 65 or 68. Under the extra 40 months that was added to it, the public is going to be protected. With respect to deterrence, which is another argument that the court made and that the government is relying on, that those 40 months is not going to add any deterrence to the already 30 years he received. So it's an argument based on Booker. It's the one argument I have, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
So that argument is really a disagreement as to how the district court balanced or weighted the factors. Was it error on that?
It's our position. It's substantively unreasonable. All those factors already factored in the guidelines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was justifying the 360 to life. That we don't believe those 40 months add anything to the sentence. He's already going to be retirement age when he gets out, if he gets out, you know, without any game time, Your Honor.
Yeah. So it's a straight substantive unreasonableness argument.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grandy.
May it please the court, Todd Grandy appearing on behalf of the United States. Addressing Mr. Villar's issue first concerning the motion to suppress, there was adequate probable cause to believe that evidence would be seizable evidence would be found in the residence. We needed the district court needed only to find that there was a fair probability, and there was based on information from the confidential informant that Mr. Villar was distributing large amounts of heroin throughout Lee County. And coupled with the not one but two controlled drug buys involving the confidential informant, the first of which involved Mr. Villar arranging a transaction, going to his home, returning to his business, and then going to the site of the exchange, which was at a gas station that was essentially between his home and business. So the fact that he went to his home before the first transaction, I think, provides a fair probability that there would be heroin found in that home, together with the fact that on June 5th, which was only 6 days before the search warrant was executed at his home on June 11th, authorities conducted a trash pull, which revealed loose marijuana, a burnt foil consistent with being used to smoke marijuana, and mail-in documents reflecting that those items came from Mr. Villar's residence. So we feel that...
Does it make any difference that the trash poll didn't reveal any evidence of distribution as opposed to personal use?
Not when taken into consideration with the information from the confidential informant about the distribution of heroin throughout Fort Myers, as well as, which was corroborated by not one, but two controlled sales involving 1.8 grams of heroin that were sold for $200.
But I'm concerned about the nexus to the residence itself.
Well, I would think that the fact that Mr. Villar was selling large quantities of heroin in the Fort Myers area, I think it's reasonable to believe that he would be storing heroin at his home, his residence.
That's based on the fact that he stopped at his home, even though he stopped at his business on his way.
Well, actually, he started at his business. This is with respect to the first transaction. He started at his business. He then went to his home. He then returned to his business, and those stops were just minutes. Then he went to the gas station to engage in the first sale.
Okay, so you've got that he stopped at his residence somewhere in that trip.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and then also the marijuana in the trash bowl. Is that it?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. But even if this court were ultimately to conclude otherwise, the evidence that was seized during the course of that search added very little to the quantum of proof against Mr. Villar. What was seized was included 28 baggies of heroin weighing 5.8 grams, mail addressed to Mr. Villar, a firearm in a safe containing his driver's license, a marijuana grinder, and canisters with false bottoms. Given the tremendous other evidence that was recovered at the defendant's trap house, and the large quantities of heroin that were discovered in the vehicle that G. Vargas and Ms. Smith maintained, as well as the storage unit they had, the 1.35 kilograms of heroin is really the most damning evidence in this case. So we would argue that even if this court were to ultimately conclude that probable cause was in some way lacking, it really would have absolutely no difference on the quantum of proof against Mr.
Lawrence. About the discovery of the firearm as a result of the search warrant, how would that be affected by that?
Your Honor, our position is it wouldn't affect it at all because there was an additional firearm found at the trap house just a hand reach away from heroin located in the defendant's trap house. There was also a firearm in Mr. G. Vargas's and the residence that G. Vargas and Ms. Smith shared, and there were two firearms in their storage unit. So because they were all co-conspirators and because this conspiracy involved large quantities of heroin and large amounts of money, bear in mind, at the time of the June 11th seizures, the 1.35 kilograms of heroin that was recovered would have retailed for an excess of $500,000. So we're talking about a large amount of money, large amount of drugs, and in that circumstance, it was reasonably foreseeable that the co-conspirators would have firearms as well. And I think our best case for that is United States versus FAM, which we cite in our brief. So I think certainly having the firearm in Mr. Villar's bedroom in close proximity to heroin is helpful, but by no means dispositive. Turning to the manager and supervisor enhancement, Mr. Villar was involved in this conspiracy beginning around 2012 or 2013. From that point forward, he and the ringleader of the conspiracy, Mr. G. Vargas, his brother, packaged heroin on a regular basis. He both worked at the trap house and regularly delivered heroin to the trap house for other street level dealers to sell, and we think that's critical. The fact that he regularly supplied heroin to other street level dealers makes this case like United States versus Matthews and United States versus Beasley, both of which distinguish between street level dealers and drug traffickers who supply other dealers. Moreover, Ms. Ward testified that when she could not reach Mr. G. Vargas or Mr. Villar or Mr. D. Vargas, she would call Mr. Villar for any guidance she needed. So we would submit that he performed in a supervisory capacity with respect to Ms. Ward. And then finally, after Ms. Ward, after all the defendants were arrested, Mr. Vargas encouraged her not to cooperate with authorities. So we feel like that the evidence was more than sufficient to support the manager enhancement in this case. Turning to Mr. Aguido, the evidence concerning Mr. Aguido's involvement was overwhelming. We have Ms. Brittany Ward's testimony that Aguido had sold heroin at the trap house during the month leading up to his arrest. We have our confidential informant, Del Toro's testimony that she participated in a June 2nd, 2015 controlled drug sale for $40 with Mr. Aguido, together with the fact that she also testified that she previously had purchased heroin from Mr. Aguido, what she said was a few times. We also have the fact that Mr. Aguido was found at the residence when authorities executed their warrant on June 11th, together with items that were located during that search, which included mail addressed to Mr. Aguido, a prescription receipt addressed to Mr. Aguido, and shorts, very distinctive shorts, which both Ms. Del Toro and the agent who was handling her testified were the same that they had observed during the June 2nd controlled drug purchase. So we believe that all of that evidence is more than sufficient to establish that Mr. Aguido was in fact a member of this conspiracy for the period of time that he resided in the trap house. One issue I want to clarify is, I could have heard Mr. Jaffe's argument incorrectly, but I heard him arguing, challenging the firearm enhancement, and in his brief, at no point in his brief did he raise a challenge to that two-level enhancement. Instead, he made an evidentiary argument that the court erred by allowing evidence of concerning the firearm that authorities discovered in the trap house located in a drawer in the kitchen with an arm's reach of 33 baggies of heroin on the counter. So interestingly enough, with respect to that evidentiary issue, he did not object. And in fact, although his co-counsel objected, when we offered into evidence both the gun, well, I guess we offered an image of the gun and the image of the drawer and then the gun, he said no objection both times. So with respect to the firearm enhancement, that is not properly before this court. And with respect to the evidentiary objection, that would be reviewed for plain error. And it's clear that firearm evidence is direct evidence of drug trafficking. So let me see. With respect to minor role, I think when read in context, and we quoted the language verbatim in our brief, it's absolutely clear that Judge Chappell simply misspoke when she said he was entitled to minor role. Throughout the course of her discussion, she made very clear that in his relevant conduct, he was no different than the other participants. Bear in mind that Judge Chappell did not hold him accountable for the full 1.35 kilograms of heroin involved in the conspiracy. Instead, she held him accountable for 100 grams or more of heroin, which dramatically reduced his base offense level from what it would have been, which would have been 30, down to 24. So he certainly was not a minor role in that conduct. And United States versus DeVaron, this court's en banc decision in United States versus DeVaron makes absolutely clear that you can't, being a comparatively minor player in a relevant conduct for which you are not held accountable does not warrant a minor role. So we feel that Judge Chappell appropriately declined to grant him that minor role, especially in light of the fact that he was only held accountable for the quantity of heroin that he sold during his time at the trap house. Turning to Mr. D. Vargas, I don't think we have anything more to say on that one. With respect to Mr. G. Vargas, Mr. D. Vargas started this enterprise. He was the ringleader of the enterprise. He started it somewhere between 2012 and 2013. This is a heroin conspiracy that I think is very telling that during one small snapshot in time, and that is June 11th when we executed our search warrants, 1.35 kilograms of heroin were recovered. So that doesn't even begin to account for the likely amount of heroin that was distributed by this conspiracy during the time it operated from sometime between 2012 and 2013 through June of 2015 when the defendants were apprehended. And bear in mind, based on Brittany Ward's testimony, we know that every day that trap house was open, somewhere between 50 and 120 baggies of heroin were sold to members of the Fort Myers community. So there can be little doubt that this conspiracy caused untold societal harm to the members of that community over a period of several years, involved tremendous sums of money, involved guns. I mean, there was a gun in Mr. Villar's home. There was two. The G. Vargas had a gun both in his home as well as in his storage unit. So this was a very vibrant, lucrative, successful conspiracy that G. Vargas presided over for more than 2 years. So we believe in that circumstance that the district court certainly did not abuse its discretion in deciding to impose a 400-month sentence, which was only a 40, which was not even, I wouldn't even call that middle of the range, because his range was from 360 months to 400 to life imprisonment. So with that, Your Honors, unless this court has any questions of me, I think I've covered all of the points that opposing counsel have raised.
Thank you, Mr. Grandy.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Chandler. Mr. Chandler, if I'll give him 2 minutes, given the amount of time that the government spent on his client.
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, just like to address really primarily two issues that the government raises, it appears to, or as it pertains to my client. First of all, I don't believe at the trial that the CI testified that my client was selling out of his house. I believe the CI's testimony was that my client was selling in the Fort Myers and Cape Coral area, not necessarily in the house. So that nexus to the house is not there. The only nexus to the house, and I know the government cited the fact that my client stopped during the first buy, and this is on page 17 of my brief, during the first controlled buy, he stopped off at his residence while going to the buy. On the second buy, he did not stop there. So it kind of counterbalances the first buy that he did not stop at his residence. There was no evidence whatsoever that there was heroin in the home.
What about his harmless error argument?
It's not harmless error because...
It sounded like there was just overwhelming evidence in support of your client's conviction without regard to what was seized at the home, at that house.
Well, what was seized at that home was the firearm.
One firearm. Was there a firearm at the trap house as well?
There was, but that was not the firearm that he was enhanced with. It was enhanced with the firearm found in his residence. The other firearms, there was no evidence of knowledge or control of those other firearms. In fact, with pertains to George Vargas, the storage unit, no one else even knew that Mr. Vargas had that storage unit. So those other firearms, there was no evidence of that. This was the firearm that specifically we're speaking of.
Okay.
There was no evidence of distribution out of my client's house. And essentially, the government made an ends justifies the means type of argument.
Okay, Mr. Chandler, I think we understand your case. Mr. Jaffe.
Thank you, Your Honor.
One minute will be fine for him.
Your Honor, I'd argue, in contrary to what the government said, that Mr. Aguedo is in a much different position than the other defendants, even though Judge Chappell limited or narrowed the amount of heroin that she found him to be held accountable for. And I would argue that under the current status of the case law, that even though, and I see I won't be invited back since I spilled the water, but based upon, at least it's not coffee, but based upon the fact that Judge Chappell limited the amount of heroin that Mr. Aguedo was held accountable for, that even though the judge was good enough to do that she still could have found that Mr. Aguedo was a minor participant and still could have given him that additional downward variance as a minor participant, which I think should have and would have applied in this particular matter. And we still think that it should apply. In terms of the plain error analysis, in terms of the firearm, I think that plain error analysis...
Mr. Jaffe, just keep going.
Okay. I think the plain error analysis certainly applies, and I think certainly with the firearm, even though I had no objection to that, other counsel certainly did, and I think as to the firearm, as to Mr.
Look, did you say no objection on the record?
I believe I did, Your Honor.
Okay.
As to the,
that sounds like not just plain error, that sounds like invited error. That sounds like waived.
That's correct, Your Honor, as to the photograph itself, but in terms of that firearm.
Okay.
So I may have to eat that at some point, Your Honor. So, but I would cite
to... fairly soon.
Yes, and the water too. But in closing, Your Honor, I would
drink that.
I would cite.
I think we understand your case, Mr. Joffe.
And in closing, I would cite U.S. v. Brantley, decided by this court in 1995 concerning mere presence. And I would cite that.
Okay.
That my client was merely present. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Upson. There's obviously no need for rebuttal, and I know Mr. Foxley, you didn't reserve any. I know all of you. We're court appointed. Thank you for accepting the appointment and for assisting our court today. United States versus Mancilla Ibarra. Good morning, Ms. Sanchez. Will you come speak with us, please?